It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Danny Gans was part of Las Vegas entertainment for many years. He was associated with the entertainment capital, unlike any other city, and his unique talent drew audiences from around the world. But after he died on May 1st, 2009, he became a footnote to Las Vegas history. Time marched on, but time stood still for my guest, Andrew Davies Gans. He's Danny Gans' son. He's director of Voices, the Danny Gans Story, which screens June 20th. At the 28th Annual Dances with Films Festival at TCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood. Dances with Films is an independent film festival. For ticket information on the Los Angeles screening, go to danceswithfilms.com. And for everything about the film, go to glansrock.productions and follow them on Instagram at gans_Andrew. And Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Before we get into the film itself, just a little note. I was here, obviously, in Las Vegas when your dad was performing. He had quite an impact on the city, and I'm glad to see that you've done a documentary on him. I wanted to start from that point and ask why you decided now was the time to produce the documentary about your father.
I decided now was the right time because I felt like I was at a place in my career where I was ready to do it the way that I wanted to do it. I had had the idea. I felt like it should be done for years prior to actually going and starting to actually do production on this. But I wasn't at the point in my career where I felt like I had the skills and the know-how to really do it justice. And I didn't want to do it unless I could do it right. And I felt like I had enough experience producing films, and I had enough knowledge, and I felt like I had a point of view and a vision for the film so that I felt like I could do him justice and honor him in the way that I felt he deserved.
When you first started the project, how many years did you decide you were going to devote to putting it together? Because as you say, you originally didn't have the experience you felt you needed to do it. But at the same time, you were interviewing people, weren't you, that were around at the time your dad was performing, knew him, and you were able to start compiling these interviews.
When I first started the film, I had produced a number of films leading up to that, and I felt like I was at the point where I believed I could really do it well. And initially, I thought I would probably be putting in 18 months to 2 years of my life to this project. And we all know how your plans just kind of fall by the wayside once you get started on an endeavor like this that has so many moving parts. After my first round of interviews, the pandemic hit, and that shut our production down, and that kept us from doing any more interviews, any more production for a year. And at that point, I still was very hesitant to keep moving forward because I didn't want to put my crew in danger. There was a lot of uncertainty around the health risks with busy casino or anything like that. So that was a huge hurdle for us. A lot of our investors dropped out at that point. And so that was another hurdle we had to overcome. And so what I thought was going to be 18 months to 2 years has now turned into 4.5, almost 5. And I've been able to work on other projects and continue to produce and develop other material in that time. But finishing this from start to finish has been 5 years, which is significant.
Clearly, you had a personal stake in this documentary. When you started out putting it together, did you have a plan in mind in the sense that you knew where you wanted to go, or were you surprised as you went, as you found out about your father, and so it went away? In other words, were you surprised at the ending versus what you thought it was going to be when you first started?
Short answer, yes, I was surprised. I had an idea going into it, what I wanted to do. And it was very simple. I just wanted to tell my dad's story. I wanted to do something to honor him because I felt like he wasn't remembered in the way that I felt he deserved. I mean, you know, just as well as I do, he accrued so many awards and accolades in Las Vegas. Nobody had ever done that before, and nobody has ever done that since his passing. But yet, you know, there is no Danny Gans Boulevard. There is no Danny Gans statue. There is nothing to honor him. And the city just really moved on very quickly after he passed. And I felt that was a shame. And I wanted to do something that would kind of remedy that in my own way. This is the best I could do. And I feel like it'll give him a global audience to be seen by and appreciated by. And so when I started, though, that was my goal. And as I got through this initial process, I felt like I was going on a very personal, emotional journey. And I felt like there's an audience for something like that. And people might find my journey making the film about my dad and learning about him after his passing to be interesting, inspiring. You know, I had to open up some old wounds and go through the grieving process again in some ways. And I feel like if, you know, even if you haven't lost your father necessarily, everybody understands and knows what it's like to lose somebody. And maybe watching this film will help them feel less alone, or, you know, rethink processing those old emotions or reaching out to a loved one that they haven't spoken to in a long time. But I also wanted to take them on a journey of this underdog story of who Danny Gans was. And I felt like his story is just on its own very inspiring. And with those things combined, weaving in his show performances, I felt like this story took on many layers and has a lot more depth than just a biographical documentary. And when you add on to that the challenges that he faced physically with his health and dealing with chronic pain, you have a very dynamic film that takes you on a journey from beginning to end. You're laughing, you're crying, you're very emotionally invested into this story, and you're learning stuff along the way too. And I just feel like my goal is that the audience just is thoroughly entertained from beginning to end.
And I want to point out again, it's the screening is going to be at the Dances with Films Festival at TCI Chinese Theater in Hollywood. And that's June 20th, I should mention as well. And tickets are available online. I'd rather me say it than you say it. You don't have to say it because you already know that. So, yeah. And I'll mention it again, obviously, as we conclude. But once it screens there, have you thought about the distribution aspect of it? In other words, how do you want to distribute the film? Will it be in theaters? Will it be online? Will it be a pay-per-view? Have you thought through, or maybe it goes to HBO or Netflix, et cetera?
I've put a lot of thought into that. And, you know, unfortunately, in these situations, it's not entirely up to me. I did recently get back from the Cannes Film Festival, and I showed the film to a variety of people there, and we received a lot of offers for distribution. So the film is in a good place. Like, we have options and we're in negotiations on certain things, but the clear path of what the exact distribution will be remains to be seen. I'm going to enjoy the premiere in LA and see kind of what comes from that and just take it one step at a time. I don't want to get ahead of myself and make a decision right now on distribution when I think there's a lot left. There's a lot more people to show the film, and there's a lot more people that I would like to have see it. But ultimately, my goal for distribution is just to have as many people see it as possible on the best platform as possible, whether that's Netflix, Amazon, Apple, HBO, you know, or if it's a distribution company that wants to put it out in theaters for a time being and then get it on the major platforms for transactional VOD type situation.
And you're scaled, I assume, the film is scaled to work in any situation, big screen, streaming, television broadcast, etc.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you thought through it in a sense that you mentioned earlier about that there's not a street or a road or avenue named after your dad? Do you think that once this documentary goes full tilt, that there might be building up some motivation for the county commission in Clark County to name a street after him, because the strip is in Clark County rather than the city of Las Vegas. So it would be the county commission that does it. But do you think there'll be some groundswell of support to make that happen?
I really hope so. And I'm going to look into whatever I can do to make that happen. We're working on a premier event in Las Vegas as well that I hope will be a really big, beautiful event to honor him and the film, to get everybody out there to watch it and appreciate him one more time in Las Vegas. And I hope that that will get the attention of whoever makes those types of decisions, so that, you know, you can still see how loved Danny Gans is, and maybe just need a gentle reminder, unique flex point in the city's history where it was transitioning from the, you know, old school to what it is now, which is very corporate, very, you know, you have sporting teams now, you have these enormous casinos, and he was at the very front of that, like that time period, and he just took over the city. And so I hope that this film will remind them of that, and maybe they can look back and honor some of the city's history.
It's interesting too, your dad came from a baseball background and somehow ended up being on the Las Vegas Strip for many years and performing at a very high level and having that work ethic and dealing with physical ailments and injuries, et cetera. Did you, when you talked to various people about him, when you did interviews, there was Louis Anderson, Donnie Osmond, Norm Clark, of course, and John Katzlamitos, among others. Did you get a sense that they all saw him the same way, or did they give you different views of your father?
I mean, there are similarities with all of them, because you, when you see somebody that is successful at that level for such a long period of time, there's a lot of parallels to, you know, people's point of view. But I think an entertainer like Louis Anderson and Donny Osmond would look at him very differently than a journalist or a critic. And but their point of view is always, you know, personal. And it's very interesting to hear where people come from. I think like John Katz and Norm Clark, they found his success very intriguing, and they were interested in learning about who he was and, you know, the inspiration behind that. But whereas Donnie and Louis Anderson, they were just kind of marveling at his talent and his drive and work ethic and how he was able to do that on a consistent basis in a city where he was enormous inside of Las Vegas. But you go outside of Las Vegas and it was like Danny who? And so he felt like word of mouth in Las Vegas was getting him more than enough press and enough you know, butts in the seats. He was selling out night after night after night for years and years and years. He didn't need to go on talk shows and do all those kinds of appearances, which Donnie and Louis Anderson had done for years and years and years. And they kind of just marveled at that and were just like, how does he do it? And I think that's the difference. And it's very interesting for me, because they were technically more famous than my dad, but they were looking to him as to like, because my dad produced Donnie's show at the Flamingo. He was the reason that he and Marie came to Las Vegas.
The time to do that, as well as his own show. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a grind, but it took some time. But Donnie and Marie were obviously, you know, they're pros. They've been doing it their whole lives. They just needed to understand how to tailor their show for Las Vegas. And I think that's where my dad really helped them. You know, Donnie has some good insights in the interview that I did with him, but it was a lot of strategy, you know, how to set up a song, how to segue into a different segment of the show. Don't just come up there and sing all your hits. It's, you know, have structure to it. Everything has a reason behind it. Every word you say has to have a reason. So cut out all the fat. That was his motto.
Cut out all the fat. And he was really in good shape. He didn't have any fat. I mean, he just was solid.
Yeah, he definitely applied that to his physical appearance as well. He was always a big health nut. He was working out 5 days a week, was very conscious about what he ate. He didn't drink. And he always took very good care of his voice. And it's why it's such a shame that he had so many health issues down towards the end. Like, it just, everything started to snowball and creep up on him. And it just got to the point where obviously, you know, his body just kind of gave out.
Was he frustrated in one sense that he wasn't known as well outside of Las Vegas? I know he was thrilled by the business he did and the success he had. Did it bother him at all that he wasn't necessarily at the same level in Hollywood or New York or other places?
I think to some degree it probably bugged him a little bit, but it's a double-edged sword because he knew that if he was going to pursue that it would take time away from his family and being with us, which is why he moved to Las Vegas in the first place. He had lots of opportunities that he passed up on because he knew it would either force him to cancel shows or force him to be away from us for long periods of time that he didn't want to do. So, yeah, I think that there was some disappointment there that what he was doing in Las Vegas wasn't getting national recognition, which I feel like it deserved. But if he had done a few things differently, like go on talk shows and do some, you know, live performances, do SNL. I don't know if he ever got invited to do that, but that would be an example. If he had done that, that all would have changed. But again, he would have had to cancel shows. He would have had to be away from us. And, you know, he just had his priorities pretty set. And that was a sacrifice he was willing to make.
And I think also there's a certain mystique about him because he was known for Las Vegas and people who may not even know who he was. They come to Las Vegas, they hear Ernie Gans, and then they go see the show, and then they tell family when they get back to where they're coming from. But that you don't see him outside of Las Vegas, there's that mystique aspect, which can improve or increase popularity as well.
Yeah, that's very true. Word of mouth was his best friend as far as marketing goes. I mean, once you got off the airplane, he's everywhere. But outside, it was all word of mouth. Like, I heard from my friend that I should come see you because it was the best show I'd ever seen. You know, you're not going to get the word of mouth if you don't have the goods.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When you were putting the documentary together, was there anything that you discovered that surprised you about your father when you did any of these people that appear on camera talk about your dad?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when he was going through a lot of the health issues, he tried to protect us kids. He didn't want us to worry. He didn't want to burden us with that kind of stuff. It was something that he had obviously discussed a lot with my mom, how to handle that situation, whether he should, you know, consider retiring or taking time off. But yeah, I wasn't completely in the know on the level of pain he was in and all the other health issues that he was battling. So I really felt for him. When I found that out, I felt like he must have felt very alone in that struggle. It was just, you know, him and my mom going through that, and probably felt like he couldn't really talk to anybody about it. And he didn't want to let anybody down. He felt very responsible for his band and the people that worked for him in the theater, whether it were ticket takers, ushers, people in the box office. You know, they all relied on him to get up on stage and perform, and so they could feed their families. And he was very aware of that. And I think he pushed himself to maintain that level of commitment to them, putting, you know, kind of sacrificing his body and his health to keep going.
Yeah, that takes a lot when you do that. Talking about his talent for a second, were you surprised at the number of voices that he was able to bring to the stage? It was such a variety. I was always amazed. It was such a variety and from different genres and different decades and different personalities. That's not easy to do. I don't know if it came naturally to him or whether he had to focus on each voice, but to be able to do them and then segue from one to the next, and start talking about Donny Osmond showed to be structured. He had a structure in a certain way. He had the band that was right there, which really helped, obviously, as well for the final effect of these voices and mannerisms. And there's physical aspects to it, too. It's not just the voice. It's the look. It's the movement, etc. Were you surprised? It's a long question. Were you surprised, or I'm returning to it, were you surprised at the number of voices that he learned?
I mean, at the time, I was a teenager, and I honestly just looked at it like, that's my dad's job. And he's going to work, and he does impressions, and he sings and dances and tells jokes. And, you know, I thought, wow, my dad has a cool job, but I didn't really put too much thought into it. Now, as an adult, you know, I marvel at the ability to combine all of those elements into a show that isn't necessarily telling a story like a typical show would, but there is a very structured feeling to it. You're riding the highs and lows, and he is taking you on a journey. Absolutely. So I marvel at all of those things, the ability to have that talent, and then the work ethic to put it all together, the singing, the dancing, the comedy, the impressions, and then also to know, to understand the structure and the storytelling elements of a show to be able to really entertain. Because I feel like that's a lot of people don't really pay close attention to the actual performance element and telling a story in the show and having the structure and understanding where you're taking the audience and having intention. And I think that's really important. And one of the reasons why he was so successful.
Did he ever talk to you about, I know he didn't share his medical stuff with you because you were a young guy at the time, teenager. Did he ever share with you one or two of the voices that he found difficult to master just to kind of share with the family?
Difficult to master.
Yeah, I know that particular personality, actor, singer, whatever, that he just had to work a little bit harder to get into the mind and voice and movement of a particular person.
I don't recall specific one that he said was challenging, but I know he really worked hard on Sammy Davis Jr. because that was a huge source of inspiration for him. He really loved Sammy Davis Jr. and what he did, because he was when he was not with the Rat Pack, or when he would have his little segment with the Rat Pack, he was a very variety entertainer. He would do impressions, which not a lot of people know. He would sing, obviously, and he would dance, and he would do some comedy. And when my grandfather took him to see Sammy Davis live, that was kind of something that sparked the idea of, hey, I think I can do that. That's what I've been looking for. And I think he spent a tremendous amount of time really dialing that in so he could nail it, because it just meant so much to him.
Yeah, Sammy Davis Jr. was an amazing talent in all those areas that your dad was involved in as well, singing, dancing, humor, comedy, impressions, etc. So, yeah. What's been the reaction of your family to the film?
The reaction from them has been very positive. They were a little apprehensive at first, mainly my mom, when I first told her I wanted to do this, just because she's very protective of my dad. And obviously with the circumstances surrounding his death, there's not a lot of information out there. And it's easy for people to take some information and immediately flip it to the negative and not really understand the entire situation. So my goal with the documentary is to try my best to explain all of the circumstances that were surrounding his death and all the causes, so that people can really understand, you know, what the health issues were, what chronic pain is, how it affects somebody long term, and just how challenging that would be for an individual to know that they're going to be in severe pain for their entire life.
That's you actually answered my last question, which I haven't asked yet, but now that you've answered it, I'm going to ask you a secondary question, which is, in addition to that scope of what you want people to take away from the film about your dad, are there some little points along the way that you want people to know about, maybe didn't know about your dad? just a little thing, a nugget or two that you found either in your personal experience that you that would surprise people if they knew that about your dad?
That's a good question. You know what? I mean, I've lived with this story in this film for so long. There's so many things that I would want people to walk away with outside of just like his incredible talent and the work ethic and what he was able to accomplish as a nobody coming into this big city and pretty much rising to the very, very top and accomplishing things that nobody had done before and nobody has done since. You know, that's the through line. But I think the fact that he was so inspired and so motivated by the relationship that he had with his father, he really instilled that work ethic and that athletic mindset. And that's something that my dad tried to instill in me as well. And I think at the end of the day, like he had so much going for him, that athletic mindset and that drive to just push through and push through. I think that was his greatest asset, but I think it was also something that contributed to his passing. And I think the motivation and where you get all of that drive like came from his father. And that's like another layer to the title of Voices. And because it's not just the voices that my dad did on stage, it's the voices that inspire us, motivate us. And it's his father's voice in his head to pursue this and to keep going. And it's my dad's voice in my head to, you know, pursue the things that I'm really passionate about in my life and to be the best husband and father that I can be. And I hope that that comes through very clearly in the film, that it's not just about the voices on stage, but the voices that you surround yourself with in your life.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Andrew Davies Gans. He's director of Voices, The Danny Gans Story, which screens June 20th at the 28th Annual Dances with Films Festival at TCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood. And for ticket information on the Los Angeles screening, go to danceswithfilms.com, danceswithfilms.com. For everything about the film, go to glansrock.productions, glans, G-L-A-N-Z, rock.productions. And you can follow on Instagram at Gans_Andrew. And Andrew, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Same here. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Yeah.